Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. The Tesla Files, the definitive expose of the world's most powerful businessman and the rise and fall of his empire, is a fascinating, intriguing, and quite frankly, shocking expose of the book that Elon doesn't want you to read. It is by Michael Verfurden and Sonki Iwason. And I'm delighted to say that Sonki joins me live on the line now. Sonki, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you. Thank you for having me on.
Now, for those who don't know, just explain that you have a quite outstanding reputation as an investigative journalist. Was it 9 awards now? Exposés. Just tell my listeners a little bit about your background and what led you to this book.
Yeah, well, I've been with Handelsblatt a long time now, almost 20 years. And in 2012, we did decide to start this investigative unit that is like particularly and only dedicated to basically crime. So we investigate, tax evasion. We have this big tax scam in Germany, and Dieselgate, the Volkswagen scandal. Other German car manufacturers were in that one too. The Wirecard scandal was a big thing for us in Germany when the most valuable financial company just dissolved within a few days. And in November 22, I had a great bit of luck. Out of the blue, really, a guy calls me who wouldn't give me his name, but he claimed that he's working for Tesla and that he has a massive trove of information that he was willing to share.
Now, as a well-known journalist in these investigations, surely, Stonker, you get these calls quite a lot for people who maybe got a grudge or people who maybe have a fantasy in their head. And obviously, Elon Musk is, you could argue, perhaps one of the most easily the world's most famous business person. So how do you have like a superhero sense that goes off thinking, yeah, this sounds good. this guy sounds, he's like, he's just making up because he's a fantasy. What was the thing that made you think there is something behind what this employee is claiming?
Yes. Well, no.
is that the sound that it makes when you get a phone call in and it's a real phone? This big.
No, that's some construction work. I'm sorry. No, it is true. You're right to say we get these calls quite often. And it is also true that I would say 9 out of 10 don't lend to anything. Yeah. That it's just somebody who either makes up something or it's not half, not one tenth of what he claims to be. And I also have to admit, at that time when this guy calls me, because he not only did he say he's got a treasure trove of information, he also said that he could just freely download it from the internal Tesla IT system, and he said anybody can do that. And at that point, I mean, this is in the first 2 minutes of conversation, and I'm thinking, okay, then that can't be true. That's impossible. I mean, yes, Elon Musk is easily the most famous businessman in the world, but he was even more, I mean, he was not what he is today. And Tesla was not what it is today. Tesla at that point of time was the absolute icon of the car industry.
Yep.
A lot of, people were upset or what do you call it, even jealous and quite frankly also quite, it was a great disappointment for the German car industry, which is, the predominant car. Germans think very highly of their,
yes,
of their car industry. And they didn't manage to do what this outsider who came out of nowhere did, making electric cars cool, sleek, fast, beautiful, all that. And Elon Musk was at that point already, I think, the richest or at least second richest man in the world. He's from Silicon Valley. He became a millionaire when he was 20 years old. And yeah, he's from Silicon Valley. So he knows about data, how important data is, and the idea of gigabytes, terabytes just lying around there in the IT system for anybody to look at them was, I didn't believe it.
Yeah, because I mean, he's also very secretive about his life, you know, to the point you could almost say of paranoia. You might say that is well founded. So the idea that you just press a button and the next thing you know, your computer is bleeping and the entire history is sitting there in front of your eyes was obviously, you know, slightly you maybe look slightly hard at that.
Exactly. So. But we don't talk about over the phone. We talk about over a messenger system. It's called Threema. And as in any messenger system, while you talk, you can send each other, you know, either text or even data. And that's exactly what it did. So within the first 5 minutes, my phone vibrates and I open the file and an Excel file turns up. And there is data of 70,000 employees, their names, the phone numbers, the email addresses, their salaries,
wow,
their social security numbers. And I'm thinking, wow, okay, this guy put a lot of effort in this. Either he hacked into the system. Maybe he's an IT guy. I don't know. I have no way of verifying. Or it's all, this is end of 22. So this is exactly the time when the ChatGPT started. And the whole world was talking about how you cannot trust data at all anymore, how it can be all deepfaked very easily by AI. So, yeah, but I mean, the mere fact that within a couple of minutes, then we talk maybe for half an hour, 45 minutes, he sends me half a dozen files and each one is more interesting than the next. And yeah, well, then it's Friday afternoon. I have to pick up my daughter from kindergarten. So I tell him, you know, this is very, very interesting. Let's talk again Monday. But over the weekend, we already keep chatting back and forth. He sends me over more files and then we talk again Monday. And then I call over Michael, my co-author, who's working in my team. And I sit him in front of my computer and say, look at this. And his eyes go big. And then he says, well, that looks really nice, but it can't be true. Mm. So same reaction. Then I go upstairs to my boss and say, boss, you know, we have something, we may have something. And I show him that and he says, yeah, I don't believe that's true. So, and that reaction so kind of prevails. And because then I also go to our lawyers, because every story that we write has to go over over his table.
Yeah.
And he says, well, yeah, you have a long way to go before this could be a story. And then, so I have this problem. There's an anonymous guy that tells me he's working at Tesla and he can download anything. But he doesn't want to know, he doesn't want me to know his name. He's afraid. He says he's really mortally afraid, he says, of, that's another thing. Sources always tell, or not always, but often they fear for their lives. Even you have no idea of if that's true.
Yeah.
So what do I do? I convince him. It takes a couple of weeks to convince him. We have to meet. I have to actually see you pull this data out of the internal system. Otherwise, I can't write anything.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is, the saying, if it is too good to be true, it normally is. But it, again, it's an interesting time because this is kind of before we get the sort of the Musk that becomes, if you like, infamous with, you know, the space program, his cozying up to President Trump a bit. And this before the Tesla dream all falls apart in a very dramatic way, because the way that he alienates his buying base by becoming, because Tesla is a car that is seen as environmentally friendly, electric, bought by liberals, West Coast elites, all that sort of people, who will turn out to be the very people who don't like Trump. So, you know, Tesla has this 180 degree turn in its market base, and it's seen it fall. So what was that first meeting like then? And did you start to already formulate a plan? Like, if this is true, then I can start to build a story, not only the fact that this data is available, but again, you're looking behind the mask of Musk, as it were.
Yeah, no, that was too early, because at first we had an information very credible, well, very critical information. At that point, I was still concentrating on the data of the employees and the customers, because there's a data, a private data on 100,000 employees and 6 million customers. So I'm thinking this is very bad. If this gets out, identity theft is a big problem. If a hacker or just any mischievous criminal has your address, your name, your social security number, date of birth, place of birth, you know, he can do all kinds of damage to you. But so I do visit him, and then he ends up copying the first 19 gigabyte of data. So we do that, and I take that home, and we see it's much deeper. It's much deeper. The kind of data is just crazy. I mean, first, it is really true. He opens his work laptop, and anything he puts in, he gets a reply. It's almost like Googling. So if you put in Elon Musk bodyguard, you get the bills of Elon Musk bodyguards. If we put in Cybertruck, we get the secret, highly confidential report on the Cybertruck, which at that point isn't on the market yet. So imagine if I'm not Zörnke Iversen, investigative reporter of Handels, but if I'm a spy from Volkswagen or Mercedes or Seat or something, I get that report. That's worth hundreds of millions of dollars to me, you know, for the competition. That it's crazy that he can just sit there in the hotel in Norway and just pull it out of the system. But then something even more incredible happens. There's a file about accidents with autopilot, or incidents with autopilot. And of course, I know, you know, anything, if you know anything about Tesla, it's the autopilot is his big dream, Musk's big dream. He promises you that Tesla soon, in his words, next couple of months, you won't even, when driving will be completely different from it is what it is now. You're getting into the car, you don't get in the front behind the wheel, you get on the back, tell your car where you want to go, and then it takes you there. And here's a file with thousands of customer complaints about their cars accelerating by themselves, braking by themselves. A woman writes to Tesla. This is internal communication. They write to Tesla. She writes to Tesla. I took my son to school, and in front of the school, with all the children running around, the car jumps ahead by itself. A guy in the U.S. tells Tesla, I was on the highway. I was going 65 miles, so 100 and something, and the car just brakes so hard that I'm pressed into the seatbelt, and the guy next behind me crashes. Another guy has that experience in a tunnel. I mean, if you're driving in a tunnel, the last thing you want your car to do is stop. And so we have these thousands and thousands of customer complaints, and we see that Tesla is always telling the customers, no, that's not a really problem. That you must have done something wrong. It's in German, there's this word Anwenderfehler. It means that the customer's fault.
Human error, almost. You know.
Yeah. Or just wait to the next update. You know, it's coming, and in 6 weeks we have the next over-the-air update. So we have these customers who are really upset, and we have these claims of Elon Musk saying that problem is essentially a solved problem. And it's also the problem that decides if we work this, Tesla is, it decides whether Tesla is a worth company worth a lot of money, and a lot in this case means a trillion, or zero. That's the calculation he does.
So when you've got something like this, I'm interested in the way that the standard response is, okay, well, that's something that you must have done. You must have done something in the wrong order, because that doesn't happen with Teslas. So that to me suggests that he is close to ideas. And not only that, there's the other thing, which is why this your informant is coming to you with great secrecy, is because this is business done not in the style of an open business style, say perhaps of the, you know, the early Silicon Valley techs, which was almost sort of the, you know, the original tech bro, Steve Jobs. It was all in garages and it was all started and it was all like a committee. It was almost like hippies. The, you know, this is all together, you know, late 70s, etc. The new style of tech bro demands almost medieval loyalty to your feudal lord, in this case Musk. So therefore he is an absolute ruler, and everything that he says is it doesn't matter if it is the emperor's new clothes. He touches it, it turns to gold, and that is it. End of story.
Exactly. Actually, I was flabbergasted.
Yes.
So we go to a restaurant. The first one we meet, we go have dinner, and then he tells me a story, and he calls himself a disciple of Elon Musk. Mm. You know, you're not just a fanboy. He uses this religion, and he says it's really like a cult, like a religion. He believed in Elon Musk. He believed in Tesla. They call it the mission. Everybody talks about the mission they are on, you know, making the planet a better place and all that, making it more green. He has always wanted since his early 20s. He's 28, I think, when you're 30, when he starts working at Tesla. He moves from Poland to Norway just to work at Tesla, and he leaves a job that paid him better. So that's the kind of commitment. Mm. And then he has this, I guess you could call it religious experience from that point of view, because just a couple of months after he starts, there's a car show in Norway, in Lillestrøm. And so he's a service technician, lowest ranking member of the Tesla community, the Tesla cult. And there's a car show and he works on the car, and suddenly he smells, there's a burning smell in his nose and heat in his neck. And he turns around and there's a car burning. A new car is burning with customers behind the curtain. There are customers looking at the fresh cars, and one of the fresh cars is burning because a colleague had, you know, manipulated a booster to make it charge faster.
Right.
So, and then he doesn't run away. He doesn't call for the fire department. He runs over or jumps. It's just a couple of meters to this burning car and reaches into the car and pulls out the burning booster, throws it on the ground. And then, of course, he's got burns on his hands. He's taken to the hospital, and his boss thanks him very much so, because, I mean, imagine, I mean,
okay, yeah.
Burning car is always bad, but yeah, yeah. Electric at a car store especially, but an electric burning car with the batteries, the lithium that is, you know, even the fire department just can't just put it out like they would a diesel car, a petrol car. This is different chemistry. So it's a potential mega catastrophe that he just has prevented. So his boss sends an email over to the US to Elon Musk, says, Elon, I just wanted to know, wanted you to hear from me first. We had a problem here, but problem solved, because we also had a hero, and that hero is Lukasz, then, who's sitting across from me,
yeah.
2 years later. And he would like, he probably would be very happy to hear some warm words from you. And then, yes, Elon Musk, being the leader that he is, he does send an email over to Lukasz, that's his name. You know, thank you for saving the day. And then Lukasz tells him, well, what else could I do? And then he explains what happened. And Elon writes back and said, that's really interesting. And if there's anything else we can do to improve the company, tell me. And then Lukasz makes a list of all the things that is, because there's a lot of stuff wrong. He doesn't have the right tools to work with. Safety measures are almost non-existent. All kinds of bad things are going on.
Right.
And next morning, his boss is in his office and Ted asks him, what are you crazy? What are you doing? You're telling Elon Musk that all these problems, what do you think will happen now? Stop talking to Elon Musk. Or if he mails you again and you feel compelled, he's expecting some kind of answer, run it by me. I don't want you to send off any more emails without me seeing them first. But then Lukasz is, that's not the kind of guy Lukasz is. He writes back. He doesn't check it with his boss. He writes back to Elon Musk and says, you know, things are getting a little bit tricky for me now. My boss wants to see my mails. And he kind of lets us see through the, he can say, maybe my boss isn't really part of the solution. Maybe he's part of the problem here. so then he gets an email pretty quickly, and Elon says, I can't respond to every email. I can only tend to important stuff. So his Elon Musk has a very short attention span,
yeah.
And it shows here. He doesn't want to be bothered, and so Lukasz is very disappointed, frustrated. He doesn't understand why he was a hero one moment and then a nuisance the next. But it gets a lot worse. 2 weeks later, he sits at his laptop, and it gets very slow. He notices things are moving much slower than they should be, and so. What everybody would do, he opens the task manager and sees there's checks for programs running in the background. And he comes across a program called Code 42. And he doesn't know what that is, and neither did I before he told me. It's a computer, it's a program that companies use against employees they consider a threat. So it's a bit of spyware. Checking on your, what is this employee doing? What is he Googling? What is he sending off? And this, so within, I mean, this is a time span of 2 weeks. And within 2 weeks, I mean, 2 weeks ahead, he was in direct touch with Elon Musk, who he considered to be the greatest business person in the world. So he was in heaven. 2 weeks later, his company is spying on him.
Yeah,
and then
just shows how naive he is, isn't he? Though he's obviously a believer in Musk, and he thinks, "Oh, now Elon Musk and I, we're like best buddies." He can see himself going on holiday. He can see himself sitting with Elon, telling him where the problem is in Norway. And of course, it doesn't work. Like, Elon will go, "Yes, very well done, soldier." And then he's the leader. He's going to go back, and obviously, it's like, okay, this guy's a prigger. He's not, he's not supposed to give the problems. He's supposed to say yes, leader, and carry on slavishly.
Presumably, that's what Elon expected. He didn't expect to get a whole list of things that are going wrong at his company. How can even anything go wrong at his company, right? So then a two-year process starts where he starts looking for information because, he's getting reprimanded. He's being sent down into the cellar to work in the cellar. All his colleagues are looking strangely at him, threatening him, he says, because presumably they think that he might cost them their jobs because he's told Elon something's wrong here. So it becomes a very toxic work environment for him. He gets sick. There's a nervous breakdown. He gets more sick. And he sees that eventually he's going to be fired. And then he starts collecting information about his boss. He's looking just for something to use for in the fight that's coming.
Yeah.
And then when he looks into this internal system, he finds that he can access anything he likes. So he collects data, and then he comes across these secrets, all the problems, autopilot problems, and more and more and more. And then he alerts the authorities. And for 2 years, he starts alerting authorities. But he never gets a reply, no matter who he writes to. And then he starts to go to journalists. And because of the way he collected data at first, he just made pictures because he was afraid. I mean, he had spyware. In his view, he had spyware on us. What can you do if your computer is monitoring every keystroke? So he takes his iPhone and starts taking pictures of the files that he's accessed. So within a couple of weeks, he has thousands and thousands of pictures. And then he starts making screenshots, and then he starts copying the real stuff because it just gets bored. And every minute he expects security to come knock on his door and say, "Mr. Krupski, please come with us." Yeah, but that never happens. So the files he collects in all, it's 23,000 files, and it's just a big, very hard to look at mass of files. And that may be the reason why the first, I don't know, dozen of journalists or so that he approaches doesn't really know what to do with this stuff. There's one in in California that writes two stories, I think, but not what he wants. Mm. And then by purest chance, he gets referred from one to the next, and then he ends up on my desk, and I, I just grab the ball and then run with it.
Your legal department must have loved you. It was a quiet Monday. Everything was going quite nicely. And then Sonka comes in and goes, we got this story about Elon Musk, and there's the data on literally thousands of people, millions of customers. Off you go and legal that. So they must have gone, thanks, Sonka. That's great work.
Well, we are a little bit strange in journalism. Even our legal department, there are two hearts beating in our chests. Yeah. One is saying, okay, this is a great story. And Elon Musk, what could be greater than to report on it? And you have to also see, I mean, it's better to, he was the absolute icon, the visionary, he was on a pedestal. So to find something wrong there was much more interesting than to find something wrong was another scandal with Volkswagen, another scandal with Deutsche Bank or something. Mm-hmm. Would you be surprised that you find that your bank is kind of siphoning off money off the accounts or something? No, you wouldn't. But Elon Musk was the absolute vision.
And the other thing is the difference between the Volkswagen and the diesel scandal. That's emissions. It's a scandal. But it's not on the scale of the Musk scandal, which is basically the data, the pledging the allegiance to the cause, you know, and the fact that, you know, this is a guy who's got information, artificial intelligence, you know, the ChatGPT and that whole information sort of gathering and what it could be used for because of his links and because of his world power now.
Yes, exactly. I mean, already Russia attacked the Ukraine and start of 22, so Elon Musk with his Starlink, he was already a political figure also. And he was deciding whether the Ukrainian army was able to see the Russians or not. So he was incredibly, incredibly powerful, becoming richer every day. And then we start this research. And yes, our legal department was very nervous, and we took outside counsel and international counsel and all that, and my boss had to inform his boss, and then it went all the way up to the owner of the publishing house, because from Elon Musk's perspective, we are a big newspaper, we're the biggest business newspaper, but we're just ants in the eyes of Elon Musk, and if he wants to sue us for, what, 5 billion or 50 billion, that's a problem that we can't handle.
I'm going to run out of time, unfortunately. The book is called The Tesla Files, The Inside Story of Musk Empire. It's by Michael Vasudan and Sonki Iwason, who's speaking today. If people want to find you online, where's the best place to find you, please?
Well, if you just Google Tesla Files, you'll find me there. There's plenty of information.
And you can order the book via our own virtual bookstore. The book is called The Tesla Files. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.